From The Nation magazine, this is Start Making Sense. I'm John Wiener with the holiday edition of our show. Later in the hour, Bob Dylan's Christmas album. He released it in 2009. We're still trying to understand it. Sean Wilentz will help. He's historian in residence at the official BobDylan.com website. But first, it's been a rough year. Katha Pollitt has put together a list of groups that need and deserve our assistance, starting in Gaza. That's coming up in a minute. In December of every year, Katha Pollitt publishes her list of groups that need and deserve our support. This year, her list starts, of course, in Gaza. And Katha, of course, is a poet, essayist, and award-winning columnist for The Nation. She also writes for The New York Times, The Atlantic, and The New Yorker. We reached her today at home in Manhattan. Katha, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, I know it's work. It's a lot of work to figure out where are the best places to give money to, especially when the year has been so rough and the needs are so great. Number one on our list this year, of course, is Gaza. But the problem is finding who is doing the most significant relief work, helping the people who have, you know, survived Israeli attack, had their homes destroyed, and are facing shortages of water, food, and medicine. I was especially grateful that you found the really important one, an indispensable organization that I'm embarrassed to say I knew nothing about before I read your column. Tell us about number one on your end of year giving list. It's called American Near East Refugee Aid, A-N-E-R-A, ANERA.
Yeah, well, I took the recommendation of my friend, the award-winning Gazan poet, Mosab Abu Toha. I think he knows what he's talking about. And ANERA, which I like, one thing I really liked about it, it has no religious or political affiliations. That's a definite plus in my book. And it works on relief and development in Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, and Jordan. So right now it's seeking donations to support blood banks in Gaza and provide displaced families with nourishing meals and hygiene kits. And there'll be more as needs evolve, as they surely will. So I think they're very reputable and good. And you don't have to worry about your money landing in the hands of the wrong people. Because you know, John, whenever there's a big crisis, there are all these people sort of retool themselves so that, oh yeah, we're really doing that. We're doing the thing you're caring about right this minute. But it's hard to know if they're actually doing that.
Yeah, ANERA has been doing this since the late 60s, helping Palestinian refugees, you know, in Jordan, in the West Bank, in Lebanon, and especially in Gaza. I looked up their website. It's fascinating to see how they do this. They're quite a big group, as well as quite a long-lasting group. Of course, the number one issue they face is that Hamas wants to control the supply of food and medicine coming in. And so their website explains what they do about this. Of course, because the U.S. State Department has designated Hamas as a terrorist group, anybody who intentionally aids Hamas gets banned and put out of business in the United States. So that's not an issue. The issue is Hamas intercepting the aid that ANERA is delivering? And they answer that directly at their website. They say, quote, "We have protective measures in place to ensure that our aid is safely delivered to Palestinian civilians and their families. It has successfully delivered and distributed approved aid into Gaza without any interceptions or disruptions. The biggest problem they face is crowd control from desperate people," which of course we've read about, has sometimes led to the breakdown of orderly distribution in a few instances. But they have managed to deliver, they say, millions of meals since October 21st, when outside aid was permitted, as well as you say, hygiene kits, medical aid, blankets and mattresses, pop-up health clinics, and organizing activities for the traumatized children. They have, you know, these convoys of trucks that are allowed in. And they say, of course, we have a lot more trucks that are waiting to get in. It's impossible for us to deliver all of this aid rapidly. It is imperative that unlimited aid be allowed in Gaza. They have 12 staff working inside Gaza, despite the dangers. So thank you for recommending for year-end giving urgent relief for Palestinians in Gaza, anera.org. After Gaza, inside the United States, the biggest disaster of the past year has been the complete bans on abortion in, I think it's 24 states, a staggering number that leaves millions of women denied access to the healthcare they need. Of course, we right away think of Planned Parenthood, but I consider Planned Parenthood to have plenty of money. I looked up their 2022 annual report, $2 billion in revenue last year. So I'm interested in groups that do good work on this that don't have $2 billion. And you have a favorite.
Well, I do have a favorite. And I want to say Planned Parenthood deserves every penny of that money, but maybe other places can also need some money. And one of them is the Bridget Alliance, which is a favorite of mine, partly because it's right here. It's right here in New York, and I know the people involved, so I know they're good people and are wise stewards of the money that people give them. What Bridget Alliance does is it does everything, it funds everything but the actual procedure, which other groups fund. It's a travel service. So if you're in a red state or a state that, you know, you can't get an abortion there, they will pay your transportation. They'll pay for your lodging. They'll pay for your food. They'll pay for your childcare. All the ancillary funds, ancillary needs that people don't often think about when they think, oh, yeah, well, if you're in Texas, you can just go to New York or you can go to Colorado. But actually, that's a big project, especially for a poor woman. And most of the women who are traveling are and who need help are quite low income. And may never, you know, they what they may need, one Bridget Alliance wants, they paid for new tires for the car, the people who are traveling because the car broke down. That sort of thing happens all the time. And so I think they are really a wonderful, wonderful place to give.
Bridget Alliance, that's B-R-I-G-I-D, bridgetalliance.org. And next biggest crisis of the year has been the rise of Trump. He's leading in the polls now. He's ahead in 5 of the 6 swing states, according to the New York Times poll. He gets higher approval ratings than Joe Biden among core Democratic groups in the Democratic base, young people, people of color, college women, single women. I don't want to give money to the National Democratic Party or to the Biden campaign. What do you suggest instead?
Well, I have two ideas. One is the Wisconsin Democrats. You know, a lot of state Democratic parties are really barely functional, but the Wisconsin Democrats are extremely energetic and they organize all year round. Like, remember when there was going to be that 50 state project of Howard Dean's, and that never got off the ground really, but in a few states, it did get off the ground. And in the Wisconsin Democrats, have scored big wins, even though they don't really control very much in the state government. They elected, this was amazing, they elected liberal Janet Protasiewicz to the state Supreme Court, which tipped the balance of the court. And then the Republicans wanted to impeach her on these spurious grounds as soon as she took her seat, and they forced the Republicans to abandon that. So that's a huge win. What is the secret? Relentless year-round organizing. You can't just parachute in and expect people to get all excited about your candidates. You have to do it all year round and build up a whole network of support. So I'm for them.
I did a little more research on your suggestion. Wisconsin Democrats have 71 county party organizations, 275 local neighborhood action teams. They work year round. They've had a 4-year effort, which is culminating in 2024, at what they call hyper-local organizing. They recruit candidates to run in every race, including like mayors and city councils of medium-sized cities and towns, especially in places where there's a threat of a mega takeover of offices that could undermine the 2024 presidential vote count. And let's remember, Wisconsin was the tipping point state in 2020, the state where Biden won by the smallest margin. So it's really important that Trump not win Wisconsin in 2024. And luckily for us, as you say, the Wisconsin Democratic Party is terrific at this, and they've been working on it for a long time. Their website is WisDems, WISDEMS, no space, WisDems.org. And you say you have a second one.
I do. I like Black Voters Matter. Now, Black voters led the charge in defeating Trump in 2020, but Republican state officials are making it harder and harder for people in Black communities to access the polls. I'm sure your listeners know about some of these things, you know, just making it fewer polling places, and you can't give people water at the while they're standing in these endless lines, and making it harder to do mail vote by mail. So Black Voters Matter does the long-term deep grassroots organizing needed to register these voters, engage them, and support them. And not just on election day, but every day and in every election up and down the ticket. It's very important.
Black Voters Matter. You support them on the web at one word, blackvotersmatterfund.org. I think we have time for you to mention one more.
Okay, I'm going to mention, this is my sentimental favorite, Alice's Kids. This, I found out about this group on Twitter, and what they do is, and they're really great, what they do is they help poor children who don't have the basics. And it's just shocking that in our immensely wealthy country, this should be a problem. Decent shoes and clothes, a warm coat, a backpack, fees to be in an after-school activity. So what Alice Kids, people write to Alice's Kids, teachers and social workers will write to them and say, we would like, you know, $100 for this purpose. And Alice's Kids will give it to them. And it helps a lot of people. And, you know, I just feel like there is so much trauma associated with poverty. It's not just not having things that you need. It's the way you're humiliated by not having them. You can be bullied. People can make fun of you. And if somebody wants to come in and help a child feel good and have the things that the other kids have, that's really great. So I like them.
Alice'sKids.org. So to sum up, Katha's list for end of year giving. For Gaza, Anera.org, A-N-E-R-A. For abortion rights, BridgetAlliance.org. To defeat Trump, the Wisconsin Democratic Party, WisDems, WISDEMS.org, and BlackVotersMatterFund.org, and her personal pick, Alice'sKids.org. Katha Pollitt, her end-of-year giving list with another half dozen ideas is at thenation.com. Katha, special thanks for this help, and thanks for talking with us today.
Happy holidays to all who celebrate. Thank you for having me on the show, John.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is our Christmas show, and now it's time for our special Christmas music feature. Our guest is Sean Wilentz. He's the official historian at the official Bob Dylan website. He also teaches American history at Princeton. He's written many books, including The Age of Reagan. It's out now in paperback. We turn to him today to help us understand what the heck is going on with the new Bob Dylan Christmas album. We reached him today in Princeton. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back, John.
Well, I want to start by listening to track one, Here Comes Santa Claus. It's a Gene Autry song, which I have to say is one of the most irritating holiday songs ever written, even before Bob Dylan sang it.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and blixen and old as reindeer, pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stocking, see your fairs, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Hang your stockings, say your prayers. Sean, what is this? Is this a joke of some kind?
No, it's not a joke at all. Although, you know, you could turn it into one by imagining the person who's really singing is Vincent Price. It gives a certain macabre aspect to the song. So you can look at it that way. You can look at a Bob Dylan song any way you want. But no. This is all very, very straight. This is Bob Dylan in many ways looking back to his own childhood. And he's singing the songs that he heard as a kid in Hibbing, where everybody, you know, listened to Christmas music, whether you were Jewish or not. And he's recalling those times and those songs in that spirit.
And I understand that that the album itself is a benefit, and that the royalties are all being donated to charity.
In perpetuity, that's right. All of them. It's going to go. The royalties are going to Feed America in the United States, and I think that there are some, there's a group in the UK, and there's another group to, you know, to feed the homeless. You know, basically, this is Bob Dylan in some ways being the character Pretty Boy Floyd from the old Woody Guthrie song. He's, you know, providing Christmas dinner to the families on relief. It's just that he's not sticking up a bank, he's sticking up his own fans.
Well, let's listen to another one. I'll Be Home for Christmas. I have to say, when Bob Dylan sings I'll Be Home for Christmas, you have to wonder, is this a promise or is this a threat?
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love I'll be home for Christmas, if only in my dreams.
Bob Dylan, I'll Be Home for Christmas. Sounds like a reason to bolt your doors, Sean.
Well, you know, it's hard to say what home is for Bob Dylan, because he's on his bus so much of the time when he's not getting arrested, that, you know, being home for Christmas is a big deal for him because, you know, he's not on his bus. But, you know, this is part of what the album's about. That's a song that was originally recorded by Bing Crosby, as were, I think, 13 of the 15 songs on this album. It's a sort of his tribute to Bing Crosby, among other things. But in 1943, remember, Christmas songs during World War II had a whole different meaning. I mean, they were very, it was very touching, actually, very moving. It was one of the, it was the music, actually, that kind of held people together, wondering whether their boys, and in some cases girls, overseas would ever come home alive, ever. So, you know, this is a very moving song. It was moving in the 40s, and then after the war, Christmas music became a kind of way to assert with some aggressiveness, to assert a kind of normality which people hadn't felt, a lot of people in America hadn't felt since the beginning of the Depression back in back in the early 30s. So he's trying to recapture that, in part, recapture that mood, which is bigger than Christmas, bigger than Christmas in America. It has to do with a specific time and a specific place. And it's also, as I say, a sort of tribute to Bing Crosby. He doesn't have Bing Crosby's voice, but he's copying Bing Crosby's phrasing. And I know he admires Bing Crosby's phrasing, so that's his chance to do that, too.
Well, let's listen to another one. Maybe you want to say anything about this one, Must Be Santa? This one includes our own David Hidalgo, the great East L.A. Musician who's a big favorite of ours here.
Indeed, Los Lobos. He's the man. He's maybe the most gifted, one of the most gifted musicians that Dylan's ever worked with. Must Be Santa is my favorite song on the album. It's a polka song. It's basically ripped off from the arrangement of a Texas rock polka band. But it also recalls, again, his Christmas time, because it recalls the great polka bands of the Midwest of the 1940s and 1950s. People like, Whoopi John Wilfart, his real name, Frank Yankovic.
Would you please spell the last name of Whoopi John Wilfart, please?
W-I-L-F-A-H-R-T.
Now, are you sure that this is not one of Bob Dylan's many pseudonyms?
Like Roosevelt Gook. No, I have a photograph of Whoopi John Wilfart at the Minneapolis airport taken at about the same time, about 1948, with his band. And I happen to know a lot about Whoopi John. He was quite a character. When he died, it turned out he had left money in most of the hotels of the Midwest, stashed away lots and lots of money, and basically hiding it from the feds. And he lived quite a wild life, as you might imagine, by a man named Whoopi John.
Well, let's.
Which I would never call you, John.
Thank you for that. Sean Wilentz, the official historian of the official BobDylan.com website. From the Bob Dylan Christmas album, let's listen to Must Be Santa, featuring David Hidalgo of Los Lobos.
That's long and white.
Santa's got a beard that's long and white.
Who comes round on special night?
Santa comes round on special night.
Special night, beard that's white.
Must be Santa, must be Santa, must be Santa, Santa Claus.
Who wears boots and suit of red?
Santa wears boots and suit of red.
Who wears a long cap on his head?
Santa wears a long cap on his head.
Cap on head, suit of red. Special night, beard that's white.
Oh, they're dancing in the corridors here at KPFK. Must Be Santa, Bob Dylan with David Hidalgo from the Dylan.
I'm dancing here in Princeton. I'm having a great time.
Let's listen to another one. Here's Bob Dylan's Winter Wonderland.
Wonderland.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is a bluebird. In his place is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along. Walking in a winter wonderland. Snowman, then pretend that he is passing ground. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we've made. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Bob Dylan. He sounds like your grizzled old uncle who's had a little too much of the spiked eggnog at the family gathering.
I think that's the point, actually. Actually, there's the Wonder Bread Singers, you know, the whitest white bread singers I've ever heard. But you also listen closely and you hear Donnie Heron on the pedal steel. I think it's the first time that Winter Wonderland's been done, at least in recent memory, with a pedal steel guitar. Dylan adds always a touch. There are touches of the current Bob Dylan along with the Bob Dylan, what Bob Dylan was hearing when he was 7 years old.
You know, this whole project made me think of Dylan's radio program on XM and Sirius Satellite, where we see what a connoisseur and scholar Bob Dylan is of these pre-rock, earlier 20th century genres. In a way, this is part of that project.
Very much so, except the difference is, I mean, this could be a show from that series called Christmas. But the difference is that he sings all the songs.
Yeah.
He doesn't just introduce them. But in fact, one of the songs, What Must Be Santa, actually did appear in the, I forget the name of the band, but anyway, on his Christmas show from XM, you know, Sirius XM. So, yes, there is a similarity. He knows a lot about it. He wants to, you know, this is an active archival, you know, he's an archivist, among other things, and this album is an example of that.
Let's listen to another one. Of course, he has to do Old Little Town of Bethlehem. Bob Dylan's Little Town of Bethlehem, I can only say there must be some way out of here.
This is not one of my favorite cuts on the album. There are others that are better. Little Town of Bethlehem, yeah, not his best performance. Either.
Well, you know,
some of the songs just don't, I mean, Christmas produced a lot of interesting, wonderful music, which is why so many people cut Christmas albums.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Everybody from, you know, Frank Sinatra to Ray Charles to Barbara Streisand. I mean, even the Jews cut Christmas albums, right? Neil Diamond has a new one, even, the second one. There's a songbook, a real songbook. But some of the songs are very difficult. This is one of them, actually. And the Christmas song, the famous Mel Torme song, is also, you need a real range to sing those songs well, and I'm afraid that this doesn't quite do it, at least not for me.
We're speaking with Sean Wilentz. He's the official historian at the official Bob Dylan website, bobdylan.com. One thing that strikes me about this music that's so puzzling, so confusing, so troubling to the Bob Dylan's classic
Band-Aid.
Music,
yeah.
Bob has always made a practice of pulling the rug out from under fans who thought they had him pegged.
Right.
He spent a lot of his career refusing to fulfill his fans' wishes.
Right.
And this is certainly part of that.
You can see it that way. I mean, the other thing is this is a cover album, right? I mean, these are all cover songs. There's not a single Bob Dylan song on here that he wrote. And whenever Bob Dylan does a cover album, it usually means that there's a change going to come. He did Self-Portrait, which got roundly panned, especially by, I don't know if I can say this on the air, but you know, you'll remember Gwil Marcus's famous first line of his review in Rolling Stone of that album, which is, "What is this blank?"
What is this crap, but not quite crap?
Not quite that, yeah. And then, you know, and then he went on to do, you know, Blood on the Tracks.
Right? Yeah.
Then he did the cover albums in the early 90s, you know, the two folk acoustic albums, Good As I've Been to You and World Gone Wrong, And the next thing he comes out with is Time Out of Mind, which is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to come? Here's another cover up. So it's Bob Dylan trying to, and I actually kind of mean this. It's him plumbing his depths. He's trying to find something. He's trying to locate something in his soul, in himself, in his music. And this is the way he does it, by singing other people's songs, singing a whole album of other people's songs. So it's interesting for that. You have to watch out for that. The second thing is, this is the first time he's done a Christian album since Shot of Love. In other words, this is a spiritual record. This is about his beliefs. I mean, you know, he's a Christian of a very weird kind. So you have to see it in that context, too. I mean, there's a lot of different ways in which Dylan is... And that also disappointed his fans, by the way. You know, when he went gospel, people thought...
Yes, just disappointed is putting it mildly.
Yeah, people went nuts. Although I think that, in retrospect, if you go back and listen to some of those albums, not all of them, not Saved, but if you listen to Shot of Love again, you will be very surprised. There's a lot of really good music on it.
Well, gotta serve somebody. In retrospect, does have some strengths.
Slow Train Coming, absolutely. But go back and listen to Shot of Love sometime. You know, the song about Lenny Bruce, it's him kind of being semi-secular. But anyway, my point is only that Bob Dylan is doing a lot of different things at the same time, and he's doing a lot of different things at the same time in this album. It just sounds so schmaltzy and innocuous, but nothing with Bob Dylan, even at its most schmaltzy, is to be taken completely at face value.
Well, I think we've got time for one more. Let's listen to, from the Bob Dylan Christmas album, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas, make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more.
Faithful friends who are dear to us. Sean Wilentz, I don't know, you can say, you know, this isn't singing, it's croaking. But, you know, when Tom Waits croaks, a lot of people think it's great. Or when Louis Armstrong sings this song, and he doesn't have a beautiful voice either in the classic
Absolutely.
Sense.
I don't know what the complaining's about. I really don't. It's the same voice that sang, you know, Love and Theft, and I don't quite get it. It's that, I think it has more to do that you're used to hearing these songs sung by Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
Or by, you know, someone with, or Mel Torme, someone with a very smooth voice. Bob Dylan is certainly adding a new dimension to Christmas that we didn't hear before. But it's a voice that is instantly recognizable, you know, much as, say, Louis Armstrong's was. You know, when you hear those voices, it takes you two nanoseconds, you know who you're listening to.
Yeah.
And so immediately that conjures up a whole series of associations. And then it's not just the voice, which at times falters, it doesn't hit the notes, you know, on that track in particular. But again, it's about the phrasing. Listen to how he's parsing out his words. Listen to how he's doing that with the music. It's actually a very much more complicated record than people would think about, because he's taking all that seriously. Maybe more seriously now than anyone else, because this song has been sung by a million other people.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob Dylan, when he sings, you know, I don't know, Summer Days or any of the songs that he's done recently, he's the only person who does those. Maybe Sheryl Crow will do them too, but very few anymore, right? It's not like Peter, Paul, and Mary. It's his song. Now he has to go up against the entire galaxy of American singers going back to, you know, Eddie Cantor and before. So he has to add something new to a tradition, and that's part of what's going on here too.
Sean Wilentz is the official historian at the official Bob Dylan website. He also teaches American history at Princeton. Sean, thank you for helping us understand.
Thank you, John. It's always a pleasure.
We spoke with Sean Wilentz about Bob Dylan's Christmas album in December 2009. Start Making Sense, a podcast from The Nation magazine, is co-produced by the LA Review of Books and recorded in Los Angeles at our Blythe Avenue studios. Renee Reynolds is our associate producer. Alan Minsky is our producer. Ludwig Hurtado is our executive producer. D.D. Guttenplan is editor of The Nation. Bhaskar Sunkara is president of The Nation. And Katrina Vandenhoevel is publisher and editorial director of The Nation. Our theme music is from Barcelona Afrobeat, licensed by Creative Commons. You can find out more about Start Making Sense at thenation.com and subscribe to Start Making Sense on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm John Wiener. Thanks for listening.